Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. This is the only radio show in New Jersey dedicated to providing much-needed education and information to the dog-owning community about why dogs do the things they do. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer.
And I'm your host, Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny.
One thing I've learned over the years is that you'll never get two dog trainers to agree on methods of training. There are so many opinions out there, but pet parents wind up feeling very confused and frustrated in their attempts to figure out what would work best for their own dogs. In recent years, we've even seen a few people create TV shows that demonstrate how dogs should be handled and trained. It's enough to boggle the mind. Trainers view their chosen methods almost like a religion. We debate methodology with one another, but become very loyal to the methods that work well for our own clients. Many of us swear that our method is the only one people should use, and anything other than our method, well, it's just wrong. Today, Karen and I are going to discuss dog training methodology with a local professional dog trainer, Phil Guida, who owns Canine Dimensions. Phil is the president and founder of Canine Dimensions Dog Training. Canine Dimensions was founded in 1996 and has offices in 12 states. Phil has been a professional dog trainer for 23 years and is a full member of the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, a professional member of the International Association of Canine Professionals, and a Canine Good Citizen Evaluator for the American Kennel Club. He serves on the board of directors of Garden State German Shepherd Rescue and the Animal Welfare Society of Camden County. We'll talk to Phil in just a moment, but Karen Fazio would like to tell you what services she offers as a dog trainer and behavior consultant in the Keyport, New Jersey area.
Are you the owner of a fearful or aggressive dog and don't know where to turn? Have you called other trainers and they've turned you down because they don't want to deal with an aggression case? Then My Best Friend Dog Training and its special service, the Dog Super Nanny, is maybe just what you're looking for. We do in-home private consultations. We're located in Keyport, New Jersey, and we do travel. Our phone number is 732-533-9376, and our website is mybestfrienddogschool.com. We are positive-based trainers and don't use physical punishment or fear as a way to motivate your dog. We use games and fun as a way to do that, and we also help you during the whole process. So give us a call. We're here for you. 732-533-9376.
Good morning and welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny, and today we're speaking with Phil Guida.
Yes.
Guida?
Guida.
Guida.
All right.
All right.
Italian name.
Rini mentioned in your intro that you created a three-phase dog training model that was a natural balance system. Could you explain what you mean by natural balance?
Sure, and good morning, guys. Thanks for having me this morning.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
I do agree that with Rini's intro that, you know, sometimes the only thing two dog trainers can agree upon is that the third dog trainer is wrong. Hopefully we can have an interesting discussion this morning. I appreciate the opportunity. The three-phase training methodology that we use at Canine Dimensions is one of instruction, then correction, then distraction, in that order. So our learning theory is that the dog first learns vocabulary, essentially, and we use lots of positive reinforcement for that. Once the dog learns what the command words mean or what's expected of them, then we introduce gentle, effective correction when necessary, and then we proof the exercises by adding distraction as we go along. And that's what we mean by natural and balanced, the fact that nature itself offers correction as part of learning, and So we believe that using all four quadrants of operant conditioning is a more natural approach than simply using rewards only and shying away from correction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what made you choose this type of training that you incorporate corrections? Now, I think we first need to define to the listeners, what is a correction? What does that look like?
Well, a correction is anything that tends to reduce undesirable behavior. So it can be an aversive stimulus. It could be something as simple as changing a tone of voice or changing one's body language. It can be a collar prompt. It can be anything that tends to decrease the likelihood of future behavior.
Okay. And you have found that this works best for your clients. But have you ever, I mean, obviously you didn't. You don't feel that total reward-based training is the way to go for your particular system. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I want my clients to be living with polite, well-mannered, obedient, happy, confident dogs. Mm-hmm. And, when I first learned how to train dogs back in the 80s, the only thing out there was lots of brute force and too much correction. And over the years, the dog training community grew, developed, improved, and we now believe that there's a tremendous place for positive reward in training a dog. It's our belief, however, that with as time went forward, the purely positive group threw the baby out with the bathwater and decided that it's never appropriate to correct a dog. So I think we went from one extreme to the other,
mm-hmm.
and we advocate a balanced approach.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that we threw. I'm a positive base trainer, but I come from your camp. I was a traditional trainer for many, many years. I would agree to some extent that there are some zealots out there that would seem that they threw it out with the bath, threw the baby out with the bathwater. But there are many ways to correct a behavior. Without having to change tone of voice, without having to physically correct a dog, and believe me, it was a challenge for me. As a traditional trainer, I come from the camp of physical corrections, and of course, not abusing a dog and change of tone of voice and all that kind of stuff. But the psychology behind learning is, as you had mentioned earlier, it's learning by consequence. And I found in my form of training, I don't necessarily always use treats. And it's not always necessarily positive. I mean, how do you correct a behavior by being positive? I mean, there has to be some sort of negative, result from an unacceptable behavior. And that could be something, as easy as, giving the dog a timeout or not allowing it to get engaged in the activity, taking the activity away, and things like that. So, it's a fine line, and I understand where you're coming from, but we can't put a blanket statement out there and say, that we threw the baby out with the bathwater, just like we can't make a blanket statement saying that all traditional trainers are cruel and they don't understand the science of learning. I mean, wouldn't you agree,
Phil?
Well, when I hear purely positive trainers defend themselves by saying that they use correction, they're usually referring to a negative correction, like the ones you mentioned, giving a timeout,
mm-hmm.
ignoring the dog, and so on. And that can work for some dogs under some circumstances. My issue is with the unwillingness to use positive corrections. And I can't for the life of me understand why one would hesitate to correct the dog for misbehavior. You're talking about negative corrections. I'm talking about positive corrections. There's a huge difference.
Right. There is a huge difference, but psychologically, I mean, you probably do it right, you know, and then there's a lot of trainers that do it wrong. And you and I both know, hopefully we both know, that if you are going to give a correction, you should give a warning first. And that gives the animal a sense of control over a situation. Any brain, any mammalian brain, any brain on the planet needs to know, is more comforting and more healthy for the brain to know what's going to happen next. So just like you're driving and you see a yellow light, that's a predictor that the red light's going to come. And it's my, experience as a traditional trainer, like you, that before you give a correction, you give a warning. So it could be something as a no or hey, and then you follow it up with the correction if the behavior doesn't stop. And you continually apply that correction until the behavior stops. But going forward, you can be more have a more positive approach by offering, hey, no. And the dog's like, oh, okay, I remember what happens after that. And as a result, you have a better behaved dog. And you know, similar consequences are used in positive based training. I don't think there is no such thing as purely positive.
I agree. I have to agree right there because there are people, you know, who say, oh no, I would never raise my voice. You have to sometimes.
That's
you have to change your tone of voice.
If a dog is attacking you, you're going to raise your voice.
Forget the positive. If a dog is attacking me, I mean, the dog's going down if I have the strength to do it. But no, seriously. But when we're training and when we're trying to teach a dog and make sure that he can learn, my issue with the corrections is that there are trainers out there who deliver a lot of painful corrections, and that's where I have to draw the line. I am not about causing physical pain to a dog, and sometimes, you know, I don't want to also cause emotional stress to the dog. I am always thinking about the emotional dog when I'm working with an animal, because if you stress a dog to such a point that, you know, that he's really feeling uncomfortable, that dog can't learn anything.
No.
Phil, do you agree?
No. Well, see, I agree, and I think that the three of us share a tremendous amount of common ground, and I certainly agree that a correction, not only does a correction not have to be painful to be effective, I would submit that if a correction is painful, it's not effective, because then you get avoidance behavior. So nothing that we do in the Canine Dimensions training system will bring a dog into a fearful state or will produce physical pain. And that is where I described that our system evolved from initially being a traditional training system using, you know, a lot of the Keeler method and what we call yank and crank, and it was basically very hard on a dog, and we don't do that in our system.
Mm-hmm.
We use corrections, but we make sure that we're never introducing fear. But one thing that you said that I want to just touch on is that while each of you are affirming the occasional necessity of using some sort of correction, and you are reasonable, and you're both saying that there's clearly no such thing as purely positive, surely you'd agree that the mainstream of the new trainers coming out of training schools today and coming out of the food-based and reward-based systems are purely positive. And not only that, they look down on and criticize the more experienced trainers who understand how to give effectively timed corrections, almost in a holier-than-thou way that really is quite frustrating to me, to see a group of brand-new trainers who have handled very, very few dogs universally condemn the use of training tools is, to me, somewhat frustrating.
You know, I have to agree with you, because what you're describing is an inexperienced trainer, and you're describing a person that is paper educated and book educated, but has very little hands on. Now, a perfect example of giving a timely, if you want to call it a correction, if you will, I would use with my foxhound. She loves to dumpster dive. She likes to go through garbage piles. Now, my correction, I would not give her a physical correction for that, but if she doesn't sit in front of that garbage pail, then we walk away from it. That's her punishment. Now, the reason why that's a punishment for her, because if she sits and I look through the garbage pail first and I see edible things, guess what? She gets to go into the garbage pail and rummage through it and get a hamburger or a roll or something like that. And as a result of that negative consequence, if she doesn't sit, if she doesn't lay down and do all the things that I want her to do in order to get that reward, she does not get that experience. And that's a real bummer for her. So to me, you know, that is a wonderful way to correct a behavior. And as a result, my dog went from jumping and lunging on the leash and tearing through everybody's garbage bag ferociously, swallowing anything that she can, to the point where she goes near a garbage pail and she sits politely and she looks at me like, hey, Ma, can I have what's in there? And sometimes she can have it and sometimes she can't. I mean, you know, some people throw, you know, lighter fluid and all kinds of bad things in a garbage and she can't have it. So the most of my walks are calm and we pass dozens of garbage pails on a weekly basis and nothing happens. But every once in a while, we'll pass the deli that has some leftover bread that they're about to throw out. And, you know, I stop and she looks at me, oh, boy, where it's about to happen. Let me lay down and be a good girl. And guess what? I go through the garbage pail. I take a look at it. I got a roll. Wow, wonderful.
Karen, you're amazing,
you
Karen. I don't think I know of any other trainer who does that for her dog. I have to tell you.
That's the thing is that there is... the dog has a desire to engage in a particular behavior for a reason.
Right.
Because it's highly rewarding.
Right.
And the removal of that reward is a severe punishment.
Phil, I'm going to forego my commercial because I want to get as much out of this discussion as possible. So everybody knows I'm Rini Pumeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. I have a website, jerseydogtrainer.com. Please visit my website. I want to talk about equipment, Phil, and, you know, I know you very well, and I know that you use a prong collar, which I have chosen not to. What is it about the prong collar that you like? And you mentioned gentle corrections before. I've never seen anybody use the prong collar gently. I mean, for anybody who doesn't know what the prong collar is, it's a spoked collar. My own opinion is it looks like some medieval piece of equipment. it freaks me out. But anyway, so Phil, tell me what it is about the prong that you feel is appropriate.
Well, I also, before I do that, have to observe that your last few sentences were quite revealing. It looks like a medieval torture device. It looks scary. It looks scary. It looks like a medieval torture device, but it's actually a much more gentle tool to use than some others, and it works because it's natural. Every dog with four legs and a tail knows what it means when somebody grabs you by the neck. It means stop doing what you're doing. And, by the way, I want my dogs to be trained that the garbage can is completely off limits 100% of the time.
Me too.
I would no more give my dog a hamburger out of I own two high drive Doberman Pinschers.
Yeah.
And I can leave the Thanksgiving turkey on the table and walk away and go upstairs and take a shower, and they're not going anywhere near that. Nor
my shepherd's the same way. He'll sit there and just stare at it he won't go anywhere near it.
I have no doubt, Karen, that you have the skill and the ability, the experience to accomplish what you've said with the garbage can tactic. But I really doubt that the average client out there can keep their dogs out of the garbage can by offering them food from the garbage can. But anyway, I digress. So yeah, the pinch collar is one tool that we use. And by the way, if you've never seen it used gently, then you've never seen it used correctly, because the correct way to use a pinch collar is, you know, the dogs that we've trained on pinch collar, and that's not every single dog, by the way. The choice of the collar is matched to the temperament, drive, and personality of the dog. And there are some dogs that, you know, a sharp dog, a dog that might redirect, a dog that lacks confidence, a dog that's very timid and fearful. Now, I would never put a pinch collar on those dogs, and it's only for certain dogs.
Why not? If it's very gentle, why not?
Because they'll misinterpret the correction. And
but how can they?
Generally,
if it's gentle.
But generally with dogs of that temperament and drive, they're not going to need it to begin with. I mean, you know, we use it to address behaviors that are more typical in a confident, high drive, hard pulling dog.
Can I interject something here? If you're using the prong and you are saying that you can give a gentle correction, but that, you know, are we talking about the average dog owner who may watch you give a gentle correction, but then once you are not there, may then, as people do, they get frustrated with the dog and the correction gets harder. Now we have a tool that might possibly be used inappropriately.
We can say the same about reward-based training. You know how many of your clients, I'm sure. I mean, if we're all honest, we'll know that there are different levels of success based on the client's level of commitment, based on the client's level of intelligence, and based upon how closely he or she is following the program. So, sure, any tool can be misused, and food can be misused.
Mm-hmm.
No, I remember Ian Dunbar at an IACP conference back in, I think it was 2007. Yeah, he said that he had just come from the Association of Pet Dog Trainers conference, and he saw lots of people with hot dogs and clickers and food treats.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he saw some beautifully behaved dogs, and he saw some horribly trained dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came to the IACP conference and saw a lot of people carrying electric control devices and a lot of dogs on pinch collar. And at that conference, he said he saw some beautifully trained dogs and some horribly trained dogs.
Right.
So, you know, any method can be applied effectively, mm-hmm. or it can be misused.
Don't we have to really get to know our clients? We have to really make sure that they understand that tool. I've taken clickers away from people. You know, I have seen people who have such poor timing using the clicker that I'll actually physically take it away and then tell them, you're not allowed to use this anymore.
I'm taking your clicker away.
I do. I joke around with them, but I very nicely remove it. And I say, I think we need to use your voice for this instead of the clicker. Because, you know, I mean, really, I see your point. And lately I've been hearing a lot of discussion about how dogs can suffer from poor positive trainers, you know? I mean, so I never thought of it that way before. But it can happen.
Not only can dogs suffer from poor purely positive trainers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, present company accepted, because I'm not saying that, I mean, if every reward-based trainer was as well-equipped and experienced as the two of you, I don't think we'd even be having this discussion. But when people go to a training course and the trainer is very young and inexperienced and knows nothing but food, and the dog fails in that system, it can actually cost the dog their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And since the current purely positive zeitgeist, I think that there not only has there not been a decrease in euthanasia, but there's actually been an increase in shelter euthanasia. And a lot of the people, and I do a lot of work at shelters, and this is kind of an interesting point, is that a lot of the people who show up with dogs and they're willing to give up on them, they're ready to give up on them, we'll ask them about training, and they'll say, oh, we tried that. And what they tried is click and treat, and they've done it wrong, or they've, you know, not been taught how to effectively correct behavior along with the reward-based training. And as a result, they feel that they've tried what's out there, because a lot of what is out there today is reward-based with no attempt to teach people how to simply and quickly correct undesirable behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, God, I hope that none of those clients were mine. But when I work with people and I tell them that I use positive reward-based training, my next sentence is, but we don't spoil the dog. We set rules and boundaries for that dog, and we don't accept willy-nilly bad behavior, and I'll then teach them about the virtues of doing a timeout or redirecting, you know, the dog, you know. We don't spoil dogs, and just because we're positive-based trainers doesn't mean that we are shoving treats and or shouldn't be trainers that are shoving treats down a dog's throat for doing nothing. You know, I mean, another instruction that I give my clients is that you don't give a dog a treat just because he's breathing. I mean, that treat has to mean something to the dog, and when it doesn't, then the dog looks at us like, wow, you're pretty easy. You know, maybe I'll try this. Maybe I'll try, you know, setting a rule for you once in a while. And so that can happen very easily. It's just like spoiled children. You know, they get all their privileges without having to be respectful or earn them. And so they become very demanding and obnoxious. And so do dogs. So I think that they're, you know, that in this discussion, we have to, you know, acknowledge, at least to our listeners, that there is more than one method available, but you have to make sure that you get a good trainer, you know, who can explain why they're doing what they're doing. You know, I don't want to go too much further without asking you I want your two opinions about. One is about Cesar Millan, how you feel about that, his television show, and the other is, what is your opinion about the use of shock collars? Phil?
Who are you?
You, darling, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay. Well, I mean, clearly, the purely positive crowd regards Cesar Millan as, you know, the incarnation of Satan, the devil, and for the life of me, I can't understand what problem they have with his message of leadership, the importance of exercise, play, mental stimulation, rules and boundaries above mm-hmm. affection, mm-hmm. and, you know, his core beliefs that owners should take control of their dogs and provide leadership is something that I think is great. I don't see what the problem is.
But do you watch the show? Do you see the corrections that he uses?
We don't use his handling techniques, but I would also observe that every time he begins to work hands-on with a dog, they put a huge disclaimer in plain English on that screen that says, do not try these techniques without consulting a professional. And so, you know, I think that clearly he has said that his way is his way, and he's not saying that it's the only way. He's just saying, well, this is my way. So he's mm-hmm. demonstrating his way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'll turn it over to Karen now. I'm sure, you know, she has some opinions on the other side, but that's my opinion.
Karen,
you know, the thing with Cesar Millan is he does stress a lot about leadership and all this kind of stuff and having control over your dog, you know, but if you're doing these things right, you don't need to control your dog that much. I mean, dogs did not evolve with human beings by being controlled. You know, we never forced a dog to learn how to hunt with us, and we never forced a dog to learn how to scavenge and follow us from place to place. You know, it was a very symbiotic relationship. And I think that is one of the key things that got lost over the years. And I would say that language was probably the biggest barrier between dogs and humans. And you know, now at least, you know, we have some trainers out there that are, you know, stressing on how to communicate with dogs properly. But I have a whole opinion about, you know, body language and being able to read body language. And human beings have the same exact body language as dogs, but just not conscious of it. And because they're not conscious of it, they're not paying attention to it in their dogs. You know, if you have a child sitting in a classroom and it doesn't know the math problem, it doesn't know the answer, and that child knows the teacher is going to pick on a kid in the school, in the class, that child's going to turn his head left and right in order to avoid eye contact and avoid being chosen. And dogs do the same kind of body language when they're uncomfortable with a situation, and so do we. But we're not looking at that in our dog and saying, oh, hey, you know, that dog's uncomfortable with that situation. And so they force the dog to face something that's frightening or something that's very uncomfortable. And they're just not in tune with their dog. And I think that is the one of the number one things that's missing in both camps.
Mm-hmm. I agree and to some extent with what you're saying. And I think that there are some similarities in our body language that people don't, they're just not aware of because they're not thinking about it and they're not learning how to notice that. But they do certain things that are much different. But it's very, very important for all people to learn the body language of their dog because that is the language that they speak. Phil, what about the shock collar? How do you feel quickly? How do you feel about that?
It's a tool. It's a tool that we don't use in our program, but if it's used effectively and correctly and humanely, I mean, I'm not one to criticize other trainers' choice of which tools they decide to use. I mean, like anything else that we've been discussing, it can be misused, and I think the worst thing that can happen is for Joe Sixpack to go out on eBay and buy himself a shock collar, strap it on his dog, and follow the little two-page instruction booklet. That can be extremely damaging, and we've worked to rehabilitate dogs who have really been messed up by
right.
improper use of the remote training collar. But I think that used effectively and properly by trained, skilled professionals who know what they're doing, I think it can be a tool like any other.
Well, the thing that upsets me more than anything is that they can go to PetSmart and get it, and they don't get personal instruction. They follow the instruction, maybe a pamphlet that comes with the unit. And, again, it's like, you know, this can cause tremendous damage to a dog, especially emotionally. I mean, so I kind of shy away from accepting other people using it. I think, you know, I've talked to some people who appear to be very educated about it and would not abuse with it. But you know and I know, Phil, that in our area there are so many trainers now using the shock collar, and then that's when they contact us because now their dog is totally messed up from the abuse of it. And so I wish that tool was never in existence. I disagree with you. There are some times when I think, gee, I wonder if somebody would have used a shock collar to help that dog and if it would have worked. But I don't have enough confidence in humanity to say that it's a good tool and it should be out there. That's just my opinion. Anyway, so we're running out of time. Actually, we're a little bit over time, but
Phil, why don't you share with the audience your website and your contact information for those who might want to get in touch with you.
Phil?
Sure. They can go to thanks Karen. They can go to www.caninedimensions.com.
And it's canine spelled out.
Either way, you can put it in either way. It'll come up.
Okay.
Caninedimensions.com. Or you can call us toll free at 888-281-DOGS.
Very good. Well, listen, Karen and I really appreciate your coming on. I mean, I wish this show could be an hour or 2 hours long. I think we could get into a lot of other things. Maybe we can repeat another discussion of this type sometime. Phil, I would love to have you back on, and I thank you very much. Karen, good job. Your opinions, I don't always agree with you either.
I know.
But that's the way it is, and so that's why we do this show, in order to express our opinions and give people ideas so that they can make proper choices
mm-hmm.
for their own dogs, and I hope that that's what they do. We'll talk to you next week, and thanks very much for listening to Thursday in the Doghouse, and the day is a beautiful day, and get your dogs out for a nice long walk. Talk to you later. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Karen. Bye.
Take care.
I'm glad you're home. Where you've been since 2 o'clock, I've been holding it in.